Now, Indianapolis considers itself, and in a number of cases, we are a world-class city, 11th largest city in population in the United States, as large an area of a city as New York City. We just don't have the skyscrapers and stuff. And we're a major city. We have a basketball team that finally learned how to win with the second string. Yay. We have a world-class football team, which is a good thing. We have a baseball team that has their opening night tonight. So we're a world-class city. And occasionally in the downtown areas of world-class cities, not just in this country, but Chris, if you go to London, if you go to Paris, if you go to New Delhi, you will see men and women on the streets of the downtowns of those cities begging. Beggars have been around since Christ walked the land. Because didn't he talk about beggars in Scripture? And didn't he help them? Also, downtown are people who are preaching the word, standing on street corners preaching the word, and people get upset that they're on the street corner preaching the word, doing what Scripture said, Old and New Testament. But there are some people that get upset when they see folks standing on the street corner, whether downtown or out in neighborhoods or on the interstate ramps, begging. And so the city kind of didn't arrest them. They kind of wrote tickets, citations to show up in court, and they went to the ACLU of Indiana, American Civil Liberties Union. They fought the city in court and won. And this week, very quietly, the city and the ACLU reached an agreement in federal court to try to regulate panhandling. The city has not publicly acknowledged that they did this, Chris. No press release from the city. Nothing from the Convention and Visitors Bureau that now calls themselves Visit Indy that claims that we've lost millions of dollars in conventions that don't want to come here because we have panhandlers downtown, even though there's panhandlers in, like I said, every major city, except maybe Des Moines. I get the feeling if I go to downtown Des Moines, I'm going to see a panhandler in downtown Des Moines. Ken Falk is the head attorney guy with the ACLU of Indiana. Ken, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Good afternoon.
ACLU, you guys intervene when someone comes to you.
That's
so you
correct.
Guys just don't go in for the sake of going in. Somebody has to come and be willing to step up to the plate and take the slings and arrows and be the plaintiff in a case.
That's correct.
How did this case come to you?
It came to us because back in, I think, last July, the city began a crackdown by giving tickets and also telling people who were soliciting pedestrians downtown to move on. Mm-hmm. We were contacted by a whole host of persons who we thought and they thought were engaged in activity that was protected not only by Indiana law but by the Constitution, mm-hmm. because the First Amendment allows someone to come up to you and say, will you give a dollar for my charity? It also allows them to come up and say, will you give a dollar for me?
Mm-hmm.
Indiana has a law which has been upheld, which regulates what we call aggressive panhandling and prohibits that. What the city was doing, though, it was telling people who were sitting or standing quietly on sidewalks that they simply could not do it. Mm-hmm. And we filed our lawsuit, and it turned out what the city had done was the city seemed to have been interpreting an ordinance that was directed towards entering traffic to solicit, mm-hmm. but was applying that to people who were on sidewalks soliciting pedestrians. And we entered into an agreed judgment where the city agreed that, yes, that is what that ordinance says, and yes, we're not going to apply that to people who are panhandling pedestrians.
We already have an ordinance on the books for aggressive panhandling. And you use the example if somebody comes up to you and say, hey, brother, can you help me out? Can you help me out? And if the person says no, and then that person continues or attempts to touch the person, that right. is a violation of the law.
That's right. Or if someone comes up to you after dusk and verbally asks you money for money, that's a violation as well, although you can sit quietly or stand with a sign.
Mm-hmm.
That's all been upheld in a lawsuit that we filed some time ago and lost.
Mm-hmm.
That has all been upheld, and we think that sets pretty much the boundaries beyond which the city cannot go, even though the city now is contemplating with a proposed ordinance to go further.
In terms of the agreement, first of all, what did the city agree to?
The city agreed that those ordinances, which I just referred to, only apply to people soliciting in traffic
mm-hmm.
and soliciting vehicles. They do not apply to people who are asking pedestrians or sitting or quietly standing. And that means that the city agreed that to the extent it given those people tickets, it was wrong and they vacated those tickets.
While the city kept complaining about panhandling and soliciting downtown, there has been a proliferation in this county of people standing on street corners, particularly major intersections and off ramps for the interstate. Soliciting.
Yes.
In this agreement with the city, what happens to those individuals?
This agreement does not touch that, and this agreement does not in any way affect the existing ordinances which prohibit soliciting vehicles or being in roadways or within, I think, if you're within 50 feet of an intersection or a light. That is not touched by this agreement. This agreement only deals with people who are on sidewalks soliciting pedestrians.
What does the ordinance say about when Jerry Lewis used to have a telethon that went on all day, Labor Day, and firefighters from fire departments and the township and the city would stand in the median with the boots and on the sidewalks at intersections? Is that now prohibited?
That has been prohibited ever since this ordinance went into effect, which has been for some time, yes.
So anybody standing on at an intersection, in the median or on the sidewalk of the intersection, saying they're raising money for charity right now is not legit.
If they're directed towards traffic, that is prohibited by the ordinance. And the reason for that is that even though that is protected by the First Amendment, there is an overwhelming safety reason. We don't want people weaving their way through traffic to solicit money.
Is part of this concern the city has on panhandling selective enforcement, that they're only enforcing this downtown or in the Mile Square, and this proliferation of individuals out in at major intersections, who are of all races? This is not a black thing. I've seen black and white and what have you. And because we've got a manpower shortage in the police department, they just there aren't concentrating on that.
Well, there certainly is an effort to deal with panhandling downtown, and I have not seen that effort anywhere else but downtown.
If you're going to enforce an ordinance, shouldn't it be uniformly around a jurisdiction?
Certainly. And it should be uniform just not only as to location, but as to who you're enforcing against. If it's not legal for a homeless person to stand by the side of a highway, then it shouldn't be legal for fire persons to enter roadways as well.
We're talking with Ken Falk of the ACLU of Indiana. I got a comment. I was trying to pull it up from the folks with Visit Indy because I asked them, gee, how come I'm hearing about this with panhandling and you guys are concerned about it and you aren't saying anything? And then I think they didn't want me to know the... Is that part of it? Are you surprised that the city didn't put out any kind of press release saying, hey, we reached kumbaya with the ACLU on this issue?
I really don't know how the city publicizes things and why it publicizes things and doesn't. I think it's significant that the city entered into an agreed judgment here, agreeing to change how it was doing things.
Visit Indy, Chris Gall, who is the head of vice president of marketing and communications, for Visiting Indy, sent me a statement saying that they've been working with city county council leaders on an ordinance that balances First Amendment rights while protecting the vulnerability of the public and maximizing opportunities for hardworking hospitality employees to earn wages. Protecting them. That's weird. And saying that they've got that they're working on an ordinance. And then they cited that over the past 24 months, at least 14 meeting decision makers have cited panhandling and solicitation concerns as one of the reasons they didn't choose Indy. And then they say tourism supports more than 74,000 full-time jobs. When we lose conventions, people don't work. Of course, if we got 74,000 full-time jobs and a convention doesn't come here, those full-time people don't necessarily lose their jobs. Does the city have to be careful in what they wish for? Because if they were to introduce a proposed ordinance and you guys felt that you would file suit, if it went to court, don't you, as the attorney, the opposing side, have the right to ask, gee, city, who are these 14 meeting decision makers?
If the justification for the ordinance is the need to retain these tourism dollars, then certainly that would be an issue. The overarching issue, though, is that the First Amendment's a funny thing. We all talk about free speech all the time, but sometimes we forget that free speech means sometimes people say things we don't like and we don't want to hear, and that allows us to walk away, whether it be the politician advertising on the radio that we turn off or whether it's someone asking for money. We can walk away. And I think part of it is we don't like being reminded that they're poor people.
One of the things that their proposed ordinance had talked about was that if you held up a sign of any sort, that that would be a violation of the ordinance and on not only their free speech issue, but if somebody came up and held up a sign that said John 3:16, that's exercise not only of free speech, that's exercise of religion.
Right. And I suspect if someone was holding up a sign saying go Pacers or go Colts, that would not be viewed the same way. We don't have the right to select what sort of speech we like to hear and we like people to say.
What is the difference between someone panhandling and asking for money and somebody standing near a sports arena holding up two tickets and saying, tickets?
Well, in fact, I would argue that the panhandler has a greater constitutional protection because of the nature of their speech versus the purely commercial aspect of the ticket person. But certainly we're dealing both with First Amendment issues.
Where do the street musicians come in under this agreement? I mean, the guy that's under the underpass on Capitol Avenue on the way to Lucas Oil Stadium that plays a mean saxophone and has a tray out in front of him where you can make – he doesn't ask. You just decide on your own to make donations. Where do those kind of people stand?
Well, those are lumped in – I mean, in this agreement, they'd be covered. They'd be allowed to engage in this activity provided they're not in the roadways. But the problem the city has had in the past in considering ordinances, at least the one that had been proposed that was tabled at the end of last year, was that they realized it would apply to those people, to street musicians, to street performers, jugglers, people who on Mass Avenue, who people like to sort of watch and who people congregate against and support businesses, it would apply to them as well.
There were some when the Indianapolis Business Journal, which has been the only media to report on this until this interview, talked about some of the comments were attached to that article where people say, well, why don't we just have a collection boxes and people can be encouraged to give to charities? Indianapolis tried that and it didn't work.
Well, again, the whole thing about the First Amendment is we have the right to decide how to exercise our First Amendment rights and the right the way we want to. The city can't tell us how to exercise them.
In terms of how the ACLU works, because occasionally, you know, people call on this program and they've got a concern and they have what might be a legal issue. And I say, you know, call Ken Falk out down at the ACLU.
We appreciate the business.
How do you all make determinations of whether a case is worthy enough for the ACLU to get involved?
We have a very small staff. At the current time, we have two attorneys. Mm-hmm. We get more than 800 requests a month.
Ooh, a month?
A month. The cases we take are ones that, number one, involve constitutional rights, and number two, are going to impact more than the individual just because we're stretched so thin. So within that framework, that's where we try and decide to take our cases.
So it's got to be for you guys to come in. Is it not just going to impact the person that it affects, but that's right. whether it impacts other people that are having that same problem, whether it's exactly. So if it's a prisoner that has been denied his or her human rights in prison or a miscarriage of justice, you're looking to see are there other similar things that could affect a larger number of people?
We'd like to solve more than one problem at a time, or at least a problem for one person at a time.
Is that one of the most frustrating things that you guys face? Because 800, that's a lot. That's 10,000 a year almost.
It is. It is frustrating. Indiana is a very fertile field for constitutional violations. So we serve the whole state. Mm-hmm. So it is hard. But we're extremely busy. We have 35 to 40 cases at any one time, plus all the things in the pipeline for consideration. But obviously, a case like this in our backyards, where the Indianapolis is violating the constitutional rights, we thought of people who were seeking contributions. That's something we're going to deal with.
Are you seeing of people that are approaching you? Are you seeing certain patterns that maybe in certain types of things increasing that are coming to your attention? You can't solve it, but you're seeing a rise in certain type of cases or certain types of complaints. I guess is the better way of saying.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, they're so varied that. We get a lot of letters from prisoners, right. And obviously that's a lot of the 800. Mm-hmm. But around the state, I don't think there's any clear patterns. Although Indianapolis has revisited this panhandling issue a number right. of times, and each time.
You would think they would figure this out and go worry about real crime on the street.
Again, I don't know why this is a priority, but obviously if it touches people's First Amendment rights, we're going to react to it.
When you guys look at a case or, you know, make the decision on a case, do you talk to other ACLU affiliates to say, hey, have you guys had a case like this? You know, or does each state have to be
We're fairly separate. Sometimes we deal with cases. Right now we're dealing with a case that challenges Indiana's same-sex marriage ban. Obviously other jurisdictions have done the same, so sometimes there's that overlap. But frequently our cases are sort of unique to us.
And you all have been known to stand up for First Amendment issues that protect First Amendment rights of conservatives or of people that this audience would not like, or issues this audience would not like as well as issues this audience would like and appreciate.
I always tell people I'm the only lawyer I know who has represented both the KKK and the NAACP.
How were they?
Not in the same case.
How was the KKK to deal with? You're one of those groups they don't like either.
No, they don't. And we certainly did not talk politics. They viewed us simply as a First Amendment advocate church, which is what they wanted. And they searched us out. But
you won the case.
I have one case for the KKK. That's correct.
I've also
won case for the NAACP.
Did they thank you?
Yes.
They did?
Yes.
Yeah, maybe there's a little bit of humanity under a sheet. But again, just because people hear you get 800, don't be discouraged. You never know.
Well, that's right. And obviously, you know, the more that the issue is a systemic one, and even if it's not, we refer people out to private attorneys and we give people advice letters. But the more that they have a systemic problem that is going to affect more than themselves, the more likely it is we're going to be able to do something.
How important is it in that first contact that there's documentation that is not – is that important?
No, not really. I mean, we get – you know, sometimes we get something that's only two or three lines and we have to call them up and figure it out. People – we don't expect people to be able to articulate why something – is wrong or what the constitutional theory is. They just need to contact us and we'll try and figure it out.
And if people want more information about ACLU of Indiana, how do they get a hold of y'all?
Our phone number is 317-635-4059. We also have a web presence at www.aclu-in.org.
ACLU-in.org.
They can just type in ACLU of Indiana, go right
there
to
us. Or 635-4059, 635-4059. It was interesting that I was downtown last night. No, I wasn't going to the Pacer game. I was going to another function, and I was kind of walking from Maryland Street back up Meridian back into the mall parking garage, and I saw one, two, three panhandlers or homeless, whatever you want to call them. Very nice. One spoke to me. I just nodded and kept walking. I had no change at all. But I've been to Washington and some other places. We don't really have this kind of – there ain't a lot of them.
No, and they understand the law. They understand that after dark, they're not allowed to talk. And even during the day, most of them now don't talk. Most of them have signs.
So they have figured this out.
They have a very good understanding of the law, yes.
See the things that we learn. Wait a minute. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos. Who we got here? All right. Tell Counselor Feaster. I'll be right with her. See, we're going to go from the ACLU to get somebody a job.
That sounds good.
Ken Falk with the ACLU. Always good to talk to you. Thanks very much for being with us.